welcome you guys to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast. I am speaking to you not in a cramped closet, but instead in a different setup that I'm testing out here for something that I want to do in the future. So here's the big test of audio. Hopefully this sounds good to y'all. Along with this new setup, I've actually tinkered with the format of this show. Like I've been mentioning in previous weeks, I haven't had the time to really sit down, think about what I want the show to sound like, what I want the segments to feel like. And I was able to do a little bit more just searching my feelings, seeing what I like, seeing what I don't like about the way I talk into this mic and the way I spew out information. So hopefully this format makes me happier once I go back and listen to this, but hopefully it makes you happier as well, as I feel like this is going to give you guys more, not only content in a superficial way, but more content that actually matters to your pro wrestling fandom. And just like personally, my big week of work, big couple months of work is like kind of wrapping up. We're doing the transition into this in between time right before Black Friday. So yeah, I personally just feel like I had a lot more brain capacity to think things through. So I'm really excited about this week to give out all this. I have a juicy, humongous script to give you guys, filled with everything you need to know about pro wrestling. I was able to check out SmackDown, Rampage, Battle of the Belts 3, Raw, Dynamite from last night. I still did not watch NXT 2.0, but I did watch Dragunov's NXT, his last NXT UK title defense against Wolfgang, and that match was a banger. So I'm really excited. We're not actually going to talk about UK, but anyways, let's just say this is a dawn of a new day. Nearly a year ago, I started Hold for Hold, started doing the podcast, and it's crazy to see this thing come back around. I have to check. I forget the exact day of the first episode, but we're a year in, guys. Woohoo. All right, let's start off with the news roundup. I scoured all the reputable sources and just collecting news throughout the week on Twitter and things like that. So let's talk about the important stuff. First of all, John Laurinaitis is reportedly gone from WWE. So earlier in the week, Mike Johnson of PW Insider reported that John Laurinaitis had been officially, quietly let go by the company. And the termination, came as no surprise to me, because Triple H was announced to be, the EVP of Talent Relations the same day that Vinnie Mac retired. So it kind of just made sense that John Laurinaitis was gone. But Fightful has since confirmed the story, saying that Laurinaitis has been is being investigated by the WWE board in relation to his involvement in the Vince McMahon Wall Street Journal sexual misconduct story. Fightful has also reported that many expected Laurinaitis to be the fall guy from a professional standpoint for this whole thing, which I would say didn't come out to be. As we know, Vince was pretty much forced into retirement, so it seemed like there was no fall guy for Vince, thankfully. Laurinaitis was put on administrative leave as head of talent relations following the Wall Street Journal story. And then, as I mentioned, Triple H took over that role of EVP of talent relations, and now Triple H has pretty much taken over the entire role of creative as well. It's really interesting. Laurinaitis had been with the company since 2001 when they purchased WCW, and many fans know him from his on-screen authority role in 2011 to 2012, which he was one of those real reasons why I stopped watching around that time. God, he was charismaless, and I'm glad he's gone, because from everything I've heard, even before this, about the way he conducts business, remember the whole Mickey James drama that went on where they were putting her stuff in trash bags? Fuck that dude, man. We don't need that in professional wrestling or in any industry. So glad to see he's out. But what we do need is this next story, you guys. This is really exciting, and it's kind of like one of these little topic points that we're going to touch on this week from everything from WWE, but the one thing pro wrestling always needs is Johnny Gargano. And recently, he teased a return to in-ring competition. While at a virtual signing, a fan asked Gargano if he noticed how Triple H was running WWE and bringing back former NXT talent. And Gargano replied by saying, I've noticed. It's exciting times all around. You never know what could happen. Keep watching. We're, referring to himself and Candace, are going to show up at some point, wherever that may be. Man, this is really good stuff. This is really good stuff. When asked about a potential DIY reunion specifically, Gargano had this to say. He said, you never know what could happen. We're living in a crazy world where anything can go down. You never know what can happen on Mondays or Fridays anymore. And then a fan then said that they hope to see Gargano soon somewhere. And he commented, I promise we will. We'll be making some magic at some point in the future. I promise. That pretty much confirms in my mind this man is going back to WWE. It's definitely the right call for him. It's just, it's that environment now where someone like him will thrive again. And I'm so excited for that. And him including Candice LeRae, who I didn't think got the best shake in NXT her first time around. I really hope that she can, you know, make a bigger impact this time around on the main roster with Dexter Lumis and Indy Hartwell and Theory all being there. And Ciampa all being on that main roster already. It's going to be a good time, I think. But last story of the week. This is more of an update, kind of. It's not really like a huge thing, but I found it pretty intriguing. We had talked about Jonathan Gresham, the whole situation with him and AEW leading into Death Before Dishonor before he lost the title to Claudio Castagnoli, and how there was like big heated argument apparently, and it didn't look good, right? So the update, basically, Fightful Select, go subscribe to Fightful Select, best news around in the wrestling world, you know. So Fightful Select, they reported on Sunday that Gresham had asked for his release from the company. The situation was confirmed by both sides as getting heated privately. However, they were told from the AEW side of things they were happy with how the match went between Gresham and Claudio, and many respected the professionalism of him continuing with the match. Despite the heated nature of the conversation, it didn't appear that any bridges were burned. They also have yet to confirm that a release had been granted. So that's really interesting, because it all but seemed like kind of a bridge burning moment of him just giving the title over and that's about it, like letting the job happen and getting out of there. But he didn't do like a full Austin Aries get up right after the finish type deal, you know, kind of disrespectful in any way. Gresham did it as best as he could with the situation that it was. And I really hope that this isn't the last we see of Gresham in ROH or in AEW. I think he has so much to offer. And if the guy wants a couple creative changes to happen, let it happen. What's the worst that can really happen if he just turns back into a face and that's it? I mean, I want to see this guy on my TV. I don't know. I'm a little bit selfish in that way. So I don't mind if I have to retcon some former storyline. I don't care. I'd rather just have Gresham on TV. Kind of good news, I guess, in a way, because I don't know. I feel like Gresham also, like, now that WWE is ran by Triple H, you know, Gresham would be a great talent to have on WWE TV as well. Like, he's already just so polished, and I think his character work obviously is like what I need to see more of. And I feel like WWE, if Triple H had inspiration for this guy, he can make it work. I really can see that. So, you know, wherever he ends up, I hope we get to see him soon, especially because he just came back from an injury too. And you know, just good workers, they deserve to be in good spotlights. That's all I'm gonna say on that. And that was a roundup for this week in wrestling. Next up, we're gonna move on to talking about WWE. Right, this is the biggest pro wrestling company in the world, sports entertainment company, and yeah, they're gonna take precedence here on the show. We're gonna do a WWE rundown. Don't worry, we have so much to talk about with AEW, but yeah, WWE was really good. really good these last couple weeks, and this week really felt like a statement, like things are changing in a pace that I did not expect. So let's talk about SmackDown. After a video recap of SummerSlam, we cut to the parking lot where Roman Reigns and the Usos are making their way into the arena. They're in Cadillac cars. They're looking cool. I like that. A little bit of a live feel right off the bat. Then we have Michael Cole and Pat McAfee welcoming the audience to the broadcast. And this is a great segment. Great segment. McAfee requests the production truck to air the footage of him kicking Baron Corbin right in the balls. And then he uses like the Madden, how they explain plays when you're watching the NFL. I think it's like called a telemarker or something like that. But essentially he's drawing his strategy of where he aimed to kick Corbin in the balls. It's so funny. And then he said he's never been prouder of anything he's ever done. Meanwhile, you cut to the back and like the entire locker room is watching this and just like Corbin is so down. And Ricochet told Corbin that it was karma. It was a wonderful thing because it's karma. And then they get challenged to a match. And then we get that match pretty quickly. So we're pretty early into this broadcast and we have our first match. It's Ricochet versus Happy Corbin. After a distraction from Pat McAfee, which was not the most significant, but Ricochet was able to hit a recoil. And then he hops up to the top rope and hits a shooting star press for the win. So Ricochet gets a win in a SmackDown opener. That's cool stuff. After the match, Ricochet and McAfee are like chilling, being cool. And then McAfee gets like a small little Nerf football and he stands up on the announce desk and punts it into the crowd, which takes skill to like not lose your balance on that desk because it's not entirely flat and he still had all the cables and stuff there. So I was glad that that didn't have a hitch in it. But yeah, really fun opening to SmackDown. Really enjoyed that. Following this, we had the Usos and Sami Zayn backstage. They're discussing the events of SummerSlam, and it's revealed that Paul Heyman is staying at home because he got that F5 from Brock Lesnar. And then Sami Zayn's trying to see Roman, so he's like kind of trying to work his way to the door, and Jimmy Uso told him that we'll text you when Roman's available. So this sets up a nice little thread that really pays off, and we'll talk about it later, but I really enjoyed this little thread. After this, we get a video package highlighting Ronda and Liv Morgan's match, and then we transition right into Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Ludwig Kaiser, which is a name that I've grown on. I think I've mentioned this before, but my friend's dog, he has a schnauzer named Ludwig, so I enjoy that name. Still don't like the name Gunther, but you know, whatever. During this though, Nakamura gets a good win. My notes kind of got crossed out of order. If Nakamura won this match, he was going to get an opportunity for the WWE Intercontinental Championship next week, which I kind of thought was going to be at Clash at the Castle, but they're saving it for this coming week, aka today, if you're listening to this on Friday, the 12th. So yeah, that's the stipulation for this match. I love it. A match that has stakes. I don't know what would have happened if Ludwig would have won this. Maybe it's just like he's blocking, you know, the opportunity. Like no one gets an opportunity, basically. Walter wouldn't have to defend. But anyway, during the match, Nakamura gets Kaiser into a modified armbar, but then Kaiser reverses it into a leg hook into a lateral press. He gets a near fall on that. Nakamura hit that like spinning sidekick he does and then hits the Kinshasa for the win. And then we get a great little like moment between Nakamura and Walter where Nakamura does the come on. Love it. After this, we get a video package highlighting the match between the Viking Raiders and the New Day. I like the shields. I didn't think I would. Normally, I don't like props, but the way that they've been selling them as like full-on weapons, I like it. They don't look too goofy. They do look a little goofy though. I wish they were like, there's just a little more metal incorporated to it because it still kind of looks like a costume. And I would rather it look like riot gear, kind of, you know, a little bit of a bulkier thing, but still, I am enjoying it more than I thought it would. But they just like show them beating down Xavier Woods, kind of explaining, kind of setting up that he's not going to be here tonight. And to drive that point home, we get a Kofi Kingston interview saying that Xavier Woods is recovering, he's in good spirits, and that it's a little weird to say it's a new day by himself, but it's time for the Viking Raiders to pay. Following this, we get Sami Zayn trying again to visit Roman Reigns, but Jimmy asks, he's like, listen, we got an important job for you today. Can you help us get Roman's entrance correct? This is normally like a Paul Heyman thing, but since he's out, we need you to do it. And Sammy doesn't really want to do this because I think he knows, like, I am not qualified for that. If I mess this up, like, I'm out, and it's for something that I don't even know what I'm doing. But then Jimmy just convinces him by saying, you know, it'd mean a lot to Roman. And so Sammy, of course, has to do it. We then get possibly the most controversial segment of the week. This is a in-ring interview with the champ, Liv Morgan, and it's only controversial in the crowd response. So the crowd starts to jeer Liv Morgan, telling her she tapped out. Liv had a pretty good response to it. I saw a lot of people pointing to this and being like, well, clearly Liv Morgan doesn't work. This isn't going to work. I wouldn't be so quick to say that. I kind of think this is not necessarily expected from WWE. I wouldn't give them that much credit. But I don't think this is a derailing thing, especially with the cards that we have being laid out right now with the gauntlet match and how that ended. I think that they were expecting to build Liv Morgan up using like a more MMA credible person like Shayna Baszler as almost like a teaching moment. You know, she has to learn how to beat these MMA people, not just getting a win, but actually beat them. But during this interview, she's interrupted by Sonya Deville, who comes out and basically says that Liv Morgan shouldn't be the champ because she tapped out. And it also is indicative of how bad of a WWE official Adam Pearce is. I love that they're continuing that little thread. But then she just said that she's going to be the champ after she wins this gauntlet match. And then we transition right into said gauntlet match. The first match being Aaliyah versus Sonya Deville. This is a pretty standard match. Deville tosses Aaliyah into the middle rope and then hits her with Devil's Advocate for the pinfall win. So she advances. We get Raquel Rodriguez versus Sonya Deville. Raquel, pretty easy win here. I like this showing for Raquel, especially in this gauntlet. But she hits a corkscrew splash, that like Vader bomb thing she does, onto Deville and then connects with the Tejano bomb for the win. I like calling it the Chingona bomb, so I'm probably going to continue doing that. And then following this, we have Raquel taking on Shotzi now. Raquel hits Shotzi with the same kind of combo there to get the win. And then we have Xia Li taking on Raquel Gonzalez. And Li is the first one to kind of make some progress on Raquel, targeting the leg big time. She goes for a knee strike, but Raquel is able to reverse that into a follow-away slam, hits that Vader bomb thingy, then a Chingona bomb for the win there. Gauntlet match number 5 now, Raquel versus Natalya. I really thought when I was watching this, I was like, oh, Natalya's going to get her out with the sharpshooter. But no, Natalya, she works on that injured knee some more, she hits like a chop block and all this stuff. Raquel rolls through a vertical suplex on Natalya to get a near fall. Natalya stomps down Raquel's leg. Then she locks in the sharpshooter, but Raquel gets a rope break. Natalya stomps down on Raquel's leg before like getting some punches on the middle rope, but this backfires on her as she gets caught for the Chingona bomb. And we have the final match of the gauntlet, Shayna Baszler taking on Raquel. And this is a pretty good match. Baszler pretty immediately gets on a heel hook, and then she stomps on the leg. Raquel goes for her Vader bomb, but Baszler catches her in that clutch that she does. Raquel gets a inverted jackknife pin for a near fall. Baszler reverses that into a backslide or a back pin for the win. So Baszler moves on. She will face Liv Morgan at Clash of the Castle. And like I said earlier, this whole gauntlet match was a lot of fun, but it is just setting up, you know, Baszler to get that eventual challenge for the title. I don't see her winning it. I think this is a learning moment for Liv Morgan to figure out how to be a submission specialist. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the weeks leading up to Clash at the Castle, we see a little more of like challenges, almost like Liv Morgan has to fight somebody else, like Sonya Deville maybe, or Natalya, who are going to try and lock her into submissions, and she's going to have to learn how to maneuver out of those. But we'll see. Should be good stuff, though. I have some faith in this. After this, we have Jimmy Uso revealing that Jimmy Uso and Sami Zayn again. Jey Uso finally just snaps on Sami. He's tired of this. He says that the bloodline has leveled up at SummerSlam after being Brock. They have two titles. Roman has two titles. And that if Sami wants to keep wearing this t-shirt, he needs to step up and bring some gold to the faction. This was almost my segment of the week. Almost. I love the intensity from Jey Uso, the way he snaps at Sami Zayn, the reaction from Sami. It's all really good stuff. But I especially love the possibilities this leads to, right? I think a lot of people have been speculating on what this means for Sami going forward. I'm in the camp that Sami Zayn should win the 24/7 title. I think that is the perfect title for this story. And let me tell you why. That title is all about, you know, people trying to catch you slipping, right? And the last thing that Sami should do is get caught slipping. He should win that title. And the Usos should tell him, if you lose that title, you're out of the bloodline. So the entire time, you know, every single 24/7 title defense is always like 7 roll-ups, right? He can't let that happen. If he loses it once, he's out of the bloodline. That's what I would pitch. And so he is going to be desperately holding on to this thing, always watching over his shoulder. It's going to open up a whole world of backstage interactions for Sami Zayn, which I want. I want him interacting with everyone. And it'd be really cool to see him hold on to this title for like a couple months. And then he finally loses it to somebody. I don't know who. Maybe McAfee or somebody that's just like completely out of the blue, out of nowhere. And he's devastated. And the bloodline stick to it. They rip his shirt off and he's out of the bloodline. And him being devastated would be a great launching point, right? That's my fantasy book. I know a lot of people have been talking about the 24/7 division in this story, but I never saw someone like fully flesh it out. That was immediately what I thought of, though. I was like, oh my god, this could be so good. I've also seen people just say like he'll go for the IC title, or maybe he'll try to cost Roman his title. I don't think he'll do anything like that. I think those titles are really set in stone and as far as their storyline. So I think that this would be like the perfect place for him. Some wishful people were also saying maybe he'll team up with Kevin Owens to try to take the tag titles. I definitely don't see that happening after what we saw on Raw. But even before Raw, I just didn't see that happening. I think this is going to be a great way to elevate that 24/7 title. After this, though, we have the Viking Raiders taking on some jobbers. They win with a powerbomb. Pretty easy stuff. Kofi Kingston then strikes. He attacks the Viking Raiders from behind with a kendo stick. He then challenges one of them to a one-on-one match. Eric takes on the match. So pretty immediately, we get Eric versus Kofi Kingston. Pretty fun match. Kofi hits a trust fall on Eric on the outside. Ivar tries to get involved with the kendo stick, but Kingston evades and hits a knee on him. Back in the ring, though, Eric goes for another one of those full Nelson knee strikes, but Kofi reverses it into a schoolboy for the win. That was just like a really fun little match. I like this feud. I think Kofi did need to win this here so that way they have something on the Viking Raiders. But I think eventually, in the end, though, I think the Viking Raiders are going to get the win here. Following this, we have the announcement of the WWE Women's Tag Title Tournament that will take place now that they have, you know, not devastated millions of people as they first announced. They're finally going to put the titles back on because, you know, millions of people are watching. You know, they need these tag titles. But no, all jokes aside, I'm really excited for this tournament. I'm going to break down the bracket real quick. So it looks like they broke this bracket down between the Raw and SmackDown side. So let's do the Raw side first. We have Io Sky and Dakota Kai taking on Tamina and Dana Brooke. And then that's one match. It's tough to explain such a visual thing like a bracket, but that's one match. The other match is Alexa Bliss and Asuka taking on Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H. That is like, that's going to be a good match. But also, those two, whoever wins, that'll be the semifinals. Okay, so my early guess here is Io Sky and Dakota Kai taking on Bliss and Asuka in the semis on the men's side, or on the Raw side. And then probably finals on Raw side being Io Sky and Dakota Kai. That'd be my guess. Next, we have the SmackDown side of the bracket. So the first match here is Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah teaming up to take on Xia Li and Shotzi. This match should be good. Should be really good. The other match, though, I don't know. It seems just like a little bit of a showcase match maybe for NXT 2.0. So the other match on this bracket is Nikita Lyons and Zoe Starks taking on Natalya and Sonya Deville. If you know their personal affiliations, Nikita Lyons and Zoe Starks, there was like a little contest on Twitter, people naming this team. My favorite one was The Nation of Gentrification. That was by Mang's Mullet on Twitter. Good stuff there. So yeah, on this side of the bracket, my early prediction, I don't know. It doesn't really matter, to be honest, because I kind of just think Io Sky and Dakota Kai are going to win this, regardless of who they face in the finals. But yeah, I kind of see Natalya Sonya Deville winning this one, this side of the bracket. Kind of an odd choice, I know. But the other teams, they don't scream tag teams to me. And Natalya and Sonya Deville are not a tag team as of my knowledge, but they just have the most, like, makes sense. Let's just put them there. Well, actually, no, now that I'm thinking about it, since I have Io Sky and Dakota Kai going to the finals, they're probably going to need baby faces to take on. So I don't know, maybe Nikita Lyons and Zoe Sarkis isn't just a showcase. Maybe this is their way of getting on there, their debut officially, maybe. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Well, Raquel and Aaliyah could also just go to the finals because Raquel can carry it. That could also be the story. And then you might get Raquel taking on Dakota Kai. That'd be interesting. Yeah, you know what? That's my vote now. Raquel and Aaliyah going all the way to the finals just so I can get that interaction between them and Dakota Kai. Next up, though, we have the WWE Undisputed Champion, Roman Reigns, and tag champs, the Usos, coming down to the ring to address Drew McIntyre about their Clash at the Castle match. Roman asks South Carolina to acknowledge him, and they do, because he is the tribal chief. Reigns then says that he feels accomplished, and that he hates Brock Lesnar, but he has some respect for Lesnar. But he hates him because he nearly killed Paul Heyman. This brings out Drew McIntyre, who said something I never thought I would ever hear on WWE TV, but he called Roman Reigns the tribal queef before revealing that he could not wait for Clash at the Castle. But another person who could not wait is this humongous return for Karrion Kross. He got the full entrance, aside from him actually coming out the ramp. He snuck behind and went through the fans, beat up Drew McIntyre. He had Scarlett with him. She put the little hourglass thing, she flipped it over to Roman. Pat has a great little moment where he's like, what could this mean? And Cole's like, it means tick tock. Good stuff, really good stuff. I did not expect to see Karrion Kross back so soon. Fightful had reported, I think, that day that Karrion Kross was in talks with WWE, but who knew those talks were going so fast. Great stuff, though. Really great. I know a lot of people are like, well, now what's going to happen with these belts? Like, are they going to keep the titles unified? USA, there was a report saying that USA wanted their own top champion. I just don't really see Karrion Kross beating Roman. Not quite yet. He does have a good chance, though, taking on Drew McIntyre maybe, and someone else. He needs some other win. Like, he can beat McIntyre, maybe Sheamus, maybe, I don't know. Maybe Cody when he comes back. I don't. It's weird. It's a really weird situation. He throws a very unpredictable wrench into this whole equation, which I enjoy. I like a little bit of spontaneity in my wrestling. So I'm excited for this. Yes, he was in Control Your Narrative, but I can let that go because I don't really know how much he cared about that stuff, and I don't really think he wanted to like be in another wrestling promotion. I think he was kind of just like freelancing it. As you saw, he worked for MLW and New Japan and Control Your Narrative. So I think he was looking for the right home. I think this is going to be his home. You know, I don't think he bleeds that banner of Control Your Narrative. So yeah, should be good stuff though. We'll see. I think this is kind of sucky though for McIntyre, because I think he might get second fiddled here. And which really sucks, because I really, in my head, ever since Clash of the Castle was announced, which I hate that name, I think it's so corny, but ever since it was announced, I was really hoping they would build to McIntyre getting one of those titles off of Roman at Clash of the Castle, because I think that moment would be huge and he deserves it. He held it down during the pandemic era. He is a very credible champion. And the moment itself in that UK crowd would be off the charts. Like, I would love it, but it doesn't look like that's going to be happening. But like I said, this edition of Raw or of SmackDown, very good, top tier, a lot of wrestling, and the segments that did happen, they had meaning, they had purpose. It was really good. Speaking of which, before I get too far, I forgot to mention that one of the conspiracy theories that we might see played out is that Sammy was actually trying to warn Roman about Karrion Kross. Now, that would be really interesting if it had any weight behind it. I personally don't think that's what, is going to be the storyline there. But it'd be cool to see that maybe he had some inside info. But then again, why wouldn't you just tell the Usos? Who knows? Let's move on, though. Let's go on to WWE Monday Night Raw. This was another really good show. Really good show. The show started off with a scathing promo from Bayley, basically just saying how herself, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky are there to bring back the hunger that this division has been missing, rein in a new era of women's wrestling. I think that was great stuff. This brings out Alexa Bliss and Bianca Belair and Asuka, and the six women, they're like, we need to just fight, but not here, not in Cleveland. Let's fight at Clash of the Castle. So we're going to get a six-woman tag match at Clash of the Castle, which should be really good. But to end the segment, we had a really good brawl where they're like fighting all over the ring. Felt really spontaneous. I liked it a lot. After this, we get our first match of the evening. Seth Rollins taking on Angelo Dawkins. This match was a spotlight match for Angelo Dawkins, and he stepped up to the plate. This was really fun. We get a great pounce spot from Angelo to Seth over the announce table that I loved. Had a good little story there going with Montez Ford too. He even got himself ejected by trying to hit Seth Rollins with a steel chair. So he got himself ejected, which is kind of rare for baby faces. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes, if he's going to push the bounds of being a baby face or not. But yeah, good stuff. Good on Seth for being able to do this. But let's get to this finish, because Seth Rollins tried so many times to hit the stomp on Angelo, couldn't get it. He said, you know what? I'm just going to hit the pedigree. He hit a pedigree on Angelo Dawkins, got the win. Great stuff. I wonder whose idea that was. Following this, though, we get Edge backstage. He's apologizing to the Mysterios for spearing Dom the week before. Ray forgives him pretty fast, but Dominic, he's not so forgiving. He's like, how can you forgive him like that? You've known him for 20 years. You know me for 25. So he walks out. He kind of shoves Edge, which is a little bit interesting there. After this, though, we get The Miz and Ciampa cutting a backstage promo. Ciampa just reiterates that this match is dedicated to Harley Race, the guy who trained him. He's then seen wearing like a Harley Race robe, which I think is an original Harley Race robe. It's really cool. Really nice stuff. Something you would have never saw with Vince in charge. Following this, though, speaking of things you wouldn't have saw with Vince in charge, we get pretty much the end of this storyline between Ezekiel and Kevin Owens. And Kevin Owens snapped immediately right out. So the bells rang immediately. Kevin Owens just beats crap out of Ezekiel, gets him on the outside, power bombs him onto the apron, and Ezekiel's selling for this was so good. It looked like something had popped or something, like in his body. He looked like he was in such internal pain. Really good. And he had to be taken out with a stretcher. Really excited to see what they do with Kevin Owens. I love Kevin Owens. Man, this is just going to be a lot of fun. Following this, we have Finn Balor. He says that the Judgment Day doesn't fear anyone because fear is a product of the imagination. Finn is saying that, you know, danger is real and they're going to put the Mysterios in danger. We also get a little bit interesting. Damian Priest steps up and he's like, I want to face Edge in Toronto when we go there for Raw. In 2 weeks, he wants to face Edge. That should be a really good match. This was a lot shorter than their typical Judgment Day promos. I still don't like that Finn doesn't show his thighs anymore. We need to start a hashtag for free the thighs. I want Finn Balor's thighs back on cable network television. But following this, we have a Finn Balor Rey Mysterio match, banger match. Rey is supposed to have his son in his corner. Edge says, you know, I can be in your corner if you want. He's like, no, I don't want to alienate Dom. So, you know, I think I'll just go at this alone. Big mistake. Eventually, Edge does have to come out because Damian Priest is being such a nuisance that him and Damian Priest start brawling into the crowd. Mysterio thought he was going to get the win, but then Rhea Ripley shows up with Dominic just slung over her shoulders. She puts him down at the head of the ramp. His face has some like cuts on it. He just looks battered. This is enough of a distraction for Finn Balor to turn around, hit a bloody Sunday and a coup de grace for the win. Really good match, really good storytelling. This is probably the most 180 feud of the year. Just in general, the biggest turnaround of the year. Judgment Day, I went from absolutely not wanting them on my TV. I didn't even want Finn Balor on my TV. And now I can't get enough. I think this is so good. It's finally at the point where I think they always wanted it to be, where Judgment Day is starting to really be taken seriously. They're getting wins. They're setting their intentions. And it's clear. It's not vague. There's no chance of spookiness. It's good. It's really good stuff. Following this, we have Dana Brooke and Tamina Snuka. They're talking about how they want to win the tag team tournament. And they're interrupted by Bayley and their matches up next. That segment was really good because it was like alive. It was in the back. It felt, this is like the main thing of Raw this time around. And I forgot to mention this at the head of the show, so I guess I'm mentioning it now. The show was filmed almost like an RPG, like an open world where wrestlers were interacting with each other indirectly. It showed the organism that is Monday Night Raw. I loved it. Really good stuff, and I hope we continue to get stuff like this. So anyways, that match is next though. Women's tag title tournament first round, Io Sky, Dakota Kai taking on Dana Brooke and Tamina Snuka. There's a great still of Dakota Kai and Io like warming up in the ring before their opponents come out, and someone like took a screenshot and said, when your opponents look like this, just know you're gonna lose. And that was totally the case. Dakota Kai hit a scorpion kick on Tamina, and Io scored the win with a moonsault. Good stuff. Backstage, we have Kevin Owens being interviewed by Kevin Patrick. Kevin Owens says that he reminded everybody who he is tonight. And in the background, this is very nice, subtle. You can see like there's some kind of car accident that's happened. A car has wrecked into like a structural piece of the building. Dewdrop and Nikki Cross are right there on the scene. And again, this is really in the background, like far away, kind of out of focus. So you start, you know, you're like, okay, what's going on here? They don't tell you yet. Next, though, we go right into the WWE United States Championship match. Bobby Lashley taking on Ciampa. Banger match. This is not match of the week. It's the second match of the week, though. I really love this match. Definitely go check it out. A lot of cool callbacks to like Johnny Gargano, a lot of submission holds. Midway through the match, AJ Styles comes down and he takes out The Miz. Ciampa tries his best to get some near falls, but in the end, he taps out to the Hurt Lock. He held in the Hurt Lock a lot longer than I feel like a lot of people have, especially like recently with Theory, where he just taps out immediately. So they're keeping Ciampa pretty strong there. So yeah, good stuff. The Miz and AJ, though, they're seen brawling backstage still, and so it's announced that they're going to fight in a no DQ match later on. Following this, we have Amos taking on a couple jobbers, which was surprising. You know, Amos on TV again in a Triple H era. Going to be pretty interesting to see what he does with Amos. I'm so glad Amos officially has gear now. I hated his old look. I thought he just looked so dorky out there, and I know that's a really stupid thing to say to somebody that's huge, that's so huge, but I felt like it was hiding his figure, hiding his strength, and this new gear I like a lot more. Following this, we have Seth Rollins being interviewed, and he's talking about Riddle, because Riddle's gonna have like an interview thing this coming Raw, and they told him that, and he's like, only thing Riddle's ever been good at is flushing his career down the toilet. And if you don't believe me, ask Dana White. Period. Following this, we have Dolph Ziggler taking on Chad Gable. Very good technical pro wrestling match. I really enjoyed it. A very not events style match. Very good. Chad Gable locked in the ankle lock. However, on the last attempt, Ziggler was able to escape it and hit a super kick for the pinfall. Good stuff. Alexa Bliss and Asuka, as well as Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop, promote their tag title match for next week, or tag title tournament match for next week. Bayley, Io, and Dakota are interrupted by Bliss and Asuka, they interrupt Bliss and Asuka, and then their confrontation's kind of like interrupted because these police start like flowing through. They're trying to get to that like parking lot scene, and again, no explanation to what's going on yet. And then we get the last match of the evening, The Miz taking on AJ Styles. Pretty decent match, no DQ here. Midway through the match, Ciampa comes out to try and help, but he ends up crashing through a table. AJ gets the win here with a Styles Clash. After the match, Dexter Lumis is shown to be in the audience. It's a really great reveal, guys. Essentially, AJ Styles had just won the match, and he's kind of like looking at the front row, and he's like, what's going on over here? And he points down to the corner, and we don't actually ever see it like on camera. We're still really far away, and the police come, they apprehend this guy in the front row, and they pull off the hood of the hoodie, and it's revealed to be Dexter freaking Lumis. Now, I don't know where they're going to go with this. Like, genuinely, I have no clue. Dexter Lumis was not a character that I thought had, like, the greatest ceiling on main roster. But, like, if Triple H has a vision for this guy, the sky's the limit. Because Dexter Lumis could be toned down to be as serious as The Undertaker. Like, theoretically, he could be that spooky guy, you know? But that's a big expectation. That's a huge, like, marketer hit. Realistically, he could kind of fill in a role of like Abyss or maybe Kane or just somebody who's tough and spooky, but I don't know, because Dexter Lumis is also, I think Triple H likes to drive stories with this guy, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Again, I have no clue, and I love having no clue. So yeah, overall, WWE, possibly the best week in WWE that I've ever done a podcast on. This was a really stellar week. I'm excited to see what happens next week, this coming week, because Friday Night SmackDown is technically today if you listen to this the day this drops. So that should be interesting. Then we got Raw. Should be really interesting. Good stuff. But let's pivot. Let's talk about AEW now. We have a lot to talk about with AEW because it was such a huge, like, wrestling weekend. So we had Rampage to kick off our review on. Kicking off the show, though, we had Jon Moxley taking on Mance Warner. This was the first time I've ever seen Mance Warner. I know he's been doing some great work in GCW and just one of those hard-hitting guys, and it really came across here. Really good stuff. Saw some criticism online about, oh, how are we supposed to know who Mance Warner is? Google it. I mean, who cares? I didn't know, and I still really enjoyed this match, and he got his character across really well in this match, so I don't know. Good stuff, though. Moxley hits a pile driver, gets some yes stomps, and then he locks on the bulldog choke for the win on Warner. Warner has a great promo. I don't remember if it's on the show or not. He has a great promo about him being here, him coming to kick ass. Good stuff. Following this, though, we get the Factory confronting Ricky Starks backstage. Aaron Solo. Well, let me just, first of all, what is that fool? What's his name? God, I'm blanking so hard on his name. But why? The Factory needs to get it together. That's all I'm going to say. Aaron Solo, though, he says that he doesn't blame Hobbs for attacking Ricky Starks because as a former tag team partner of his, he gets it. But he tells him to get in the Factory, and Starks says the Factory can kiss his ass. Sorry, I like total mind fart with that guy's name. I can't think of his name right now, and I just saw him. Anyways, but we also get a shot of Anthony Agogo in this bit because like Starks leaves after telling him to kiss his ass, and then Agogo like tries to step to him, but they hold him back. But yeah, good stuff. Well, is it good stuff? I don't really know, actually. Not really. I mean, this isn't the best first feud for him, but the way they tied it in on Dynamite made me like it more. So we'll see. I don't know. Following this, though, we have Ryan Nemeth taking on Takeshita. Takeshita gets an easy win here with a diving knee. And then Peter Avalon tried to get in, and Takeshita responded with another knee to Avalon. Following this, we have Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Trent Beretta, the best friends. They are being interviewed backstage. Interviewer asked if they need to change their game plan. Beretta revealed that they'd be joining the Trios tournament as a trio. And then Danhausen comes into frame as Dr. Danhausen. He does the Joker bit where he has the mask, the like cosmetic, the facial mask over him. And then he reveals that it's him, even though it's very obvious that it's him the entire time. Really good stuff. Following this, we have Madison Rae taking on Layla Gray. Another person, I never watched a match of Madison Gray. I guess I missed out there because she's really good. They start exchanging strikes towards the end. Rain then hits her with a sliding lariat and the cross reigns for the win. This brings out Jade Cargill. She says, y'all know how big I am on charity. So she's going to give, Madison Rae a chance for the TBS title on Dynamite. Kara Hogan tries to attack Madison too, but she gets hit by the cross reigns. After this, we get the like a nice little double promo featuring the Lucha Bros, you know, the part of the Death Triangle, Penta Oscuro and Rey Fénix. And then we get like the Los Faction Incorporadores, their like bit. So hyping up the match because they're going to have a Lucha Rules match on Dynamite. Then we get the main event segment. Mark Henry does a little typical interview with the AEW Tag Champions Swerve in Our Glory and the team of Josh Woods and Tony Nese. Sterling points out that Woods choked out Keith Lee. He's like, you should remember him. He puts your ass to sleep. And what I wish he would have said was, Keith, I don't think you'll remember Josh Woods because of the way he knocked you out. You know what I mean? I think that would have been more effective. But anyways, we get this match. It's a Friday night street fight, Swerve in Our Glory versus Josh Woods and Tony Nese. Really fun stuff. Towards the finish, Tony Nese threw some chairs in the ring. Swerve hits a backdrop onto the chairs to Nese. Then he hits that stomp for the win. Good stuff. Light show of wrestling. Not my favorite Rampage, but definitely not the worst. I really pop for Dr. Danhausen. I enjoyed that a lot. So, but next night, following it up with AEW Battle of Belts 3. I saw a lot of people saying that this is like the most mediocre thing they do. And it's not great, okay? Because I think they filmed this right after Rampage. So judging by my own experience, that'd be somewhere around midnight. Like close to midnight that they'd be filming these. So yeah, the crowd's pretty much not there for this anymore. But anyways, we start off the night with the TNT title match between Wardlow and Jay Lethal, who's accompanied by Sonam Singh and Sanjay Dutt. Wardlow, he hits a wind up Lariat on Lethal. Wardlow then power bombs Lethal for the win. After the match, seeing Dutt and Lethal attacked Wardlow, Lethal tries to get a figure four in while Singh has like his boot on Wardlow's neck. Wardlow gets some jabs on Lethal and Dutt, and then hits a low blow on Singh, and he teases about to hit a powerbomb on the big guy, but he doesn't hit it. It's reverse back body drop. Then there's a table brought in the ring, and Sanam Singh gives a ginormous choke slam to Wardlow on the table. Really fun little closing segment. It just revitalized that faction for me a little bit as well. Keeping that thread of revitalization going, we had the AEW Women's Championship match, Thunder Rosa taking on Jamie Hayter, both accompanied by their respected partners. Rosa Hayter, good stuff, really good in-ring action. This should have main evented in my opinion, but I'm fine with it. If it were up to me, I probably would have had Claudio and Takeshita open, TNT title in the middle, and then the women's match at the end, but that's just me. But anyways, towards the end of this match, Rosa gets a couple near falls, and then she connects with, I forget her finisher name, the Thunder Rosa driver, the Thunder driver, something like that, and she retains. Really good stuff, though. Jamie Hayter had a great performance here. Really rejuvenated that, like, legitimacy in both, not only in her own character, because I think Jamie Hayter's kind of taken a back seat, but in this feud as a whole. And we're going to talk about it a little bit later, because I don't know where it's necessarily going from here, but I do think they need to start putting in the work for Jamie Hayter's eventual split from Britt Baker a little bit more than they were before. They were being pretty subtle with it, and then they really just completely dropped it, so hope to see something there. But like I said, main event, Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship match, Claudio Castagnoli taking on Takeshita here. Really good stuff. This is the match of the week. Spoiler alert. Really good match. So should I spoil this match? Like, I mean, you know Claudio wins, but I won't give away any of the spots. Just go watch this match. It's breezy. It's good. It harpens back to like a good Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero match. Really good stuff. And this seems to be the end of Takeshita's excursion in the US, which I'm pretty sad about, but I hope the next time he comes back, we get a little more character stuff. A real story with him would be really fun. So yeah. Good stuff. Following this, let's talk about Dynamite. That happened last night. I'm not gonna rhyme no more. This was a good Dynamite. Really good Dynamite. My one caveat here, and this is, you know, I've said it a lot, but I really don't like when they put the women's division in that one spot. In that one little spot. That they sandwich it in between, they make it seem not important. I don't like that. I really don't like it. And it happened again. But, you know, whatever. I can't get everything I want, but I don't like that. But let's talk about what I did like. This coffin match between Brody King and Darby Allin. I think this is my favorite coffin match so far in this whole series of Darby having coffin matches to end every single feud. He's had one with Ethan Page, which I was there live for. Really good one. And he had one with, who else was it? Andrade. And the Andrade one was my favorite before because I loved how much fun Andrade was having throwing Darby around. But this one felt like the most serious coffin match. And yes, I know it had some goofy stuff like Sting running in, who was in the coffin seemingly the whole time. And the chokeout finish where Brody kind of just like directly falls in the casket perfectly, that even commentary we're making jokes about. But overall, I just really just enjoyed this. It told a lot of stories in between. Definitely go check this match out. It was nearly my match of the week, but it's not. It's not as good as that Claudio Takeshita match on my like personal ranking, but this is really good stuff. But in the end, though, like I said, Darby Allin, he takes the necklace that Brody King wears to the ring and he chokes out Brody King with it. on the apron, harping back to, you know, the start of this feud with him getting eliminated from the Royal Rampage Battle Royal thingy. So he chokes out Brody. He falls right into the casket, and it literally shuts itself. Like, the way the impact his body made shut the door on him. It was really good stuff. Following this, we have both Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley promos hyping up the main event. I did not like Moxley's opening, where he was kind of like, we already have the FTW title, so we could just call this the FYI title. I don't like it. Not my thing. Following this, we have the Trios Championship Tournament announced. Well, not announced. The bracket was announced, and it begins next week with the Young Bucks taking on Dragon Lee, Rush, and Andrade Cien Almas. Andrade Ed Idolo. So let's talk about the bracket here, because they revealed it. Left side of the bracket, we have the Young Bucks with their mystery opponent taking on Dragon Lee, Rush, and Andrade, like I just said. They will go on to face whoever wins this following match between Death Triangle and Aussie Open. Aussie Open will be represented with Will Ospreay. That's going to be great stuff. Yeah, that's going to be such good stuff. Pac, Will Ospreay, and the like, oh my god, that's going to be good. It's going to be sad because they're not going to win this tournament, but damn, would I love to see Aussie Open win this whole thing. I also would love Death Triangle to win this whole thing. That'd be great. Pac holding both that Atlantic title and this title. Boom. Anyways, though, right side of the bracket, Dark Order taking on the House of Black. House of Black got that in the bag. Best Friends take on Trust Busters, the team of Ari Daivari and Parker Boudreaux and someone else. I forget their name. That team, this is a tangent. I'm not big on this Parker Boudreaux guy. He is not my guy. Like, I know people are like, oh, he's the next Brock Lesnar. No, he just looks like him, and not even that much anymore. Not a fan, really. We'll see how this goes with that guy, but yeah, not looking forward to this. And we'll talk about that later too, because he's gonna come up a little later. But anyways, this bracket, my official predictions right now, I got the Bucks and their mystery opponent, who I really don't know who's gonna be. It might be Omega, it might not be. So I got the Bucks heading into the semis, and heading into the finals, and I think they'll take on House of Black, and I think House of Black will actually win this. I think this is finally gonna be the title that they give to Malakai Black, who desperately needs a title, because that guy is too good to be walking around beltless. But anyways, following this, let's talk about the Tornado Lucha Rules tag match between the Lucha Bros and Andrade and Rush. Really good stuff, really good Lucha things here. Andrade and Rush utilizing that mask weakness of Penta. They tied his like ribbons to the turnbuckle, forcing him to unmask in order to break up a pinfall. Alex Abrantes tries to bring in a new mask, but they throw it out into the crowd, and then the crowd starts chanting, throw it back. I would have loved to have seen that. But then ultimately, Andrade gets the pin on Rey Fénix with a hammerlock DDT. Just really good stuff here. Really good. Following this, we have the Young Bucks. This is segment of the week, guys. This beat out that Sami Zayn one, and it was close, but this is my favorite segment. It might even be a contender for segment of the year, you guys. Oh boy, let's set the scene. So the Young Bucks clearly have Brandon Cutler recording them. He's like, you're going to want to get this. And then they walk into the locker room where the Dark Order and Hangman Page are. And Matt Jackson just spills his guts, you guys. Apologizes for everything. He just wants Hangman to know that how proud they are of him. And as much as they couldn't say it before, they want to say it now. And they need him to be their partner in the Trios tournament. And I really thought, I was like, oh my god, this is it, we're gonna get the Hung Bucks. No, Hangman Page turns it down respectfully, very respectfully, just says, you know, the Dark Order, they've been in my corner this whole time since I won the title. They congratulated me, they had my back, and I'm gonna have theirs. I will not be wrestling in the Trios tournament, but I will be in their corner, and because of that, I just don't feel right being on your team. And so they start to head out, and Cutler's like, you know, I could be your partner. And they're like, shut up, Cutler. They're really pissed. So I don't know where this is going to lead, okay? Because it seemed like a face turn for the Bucks, right? But the rejection might flip this, right? They could get vengeful, spiteful out of this. They put their heart out there and got it stomped on in a way. So I don't know. We're going to see. We also could see Hangman, you know, maybe Dark Order gets knocked out by the House of Black, like I think they will, and Hangman's like, well, since my team's not in this anymore, maybe the Dark Order give him permission to join the Bucks, you know. I could see that, but I don't know, because they're gonna need, their match is coming up next week is the thing, so they're gonna need a partner fast. I don't know who that's gonna be. Kenny Omega, maybe? That'd be so cool, but I also could see them having Jay White, maybe. Well, I don't know, is Jay White still in Japan for the, he might be in Japan for the tournament. I don't know, this is gonna be interesting. That mystery opponent is very interesting indeed. Following this, we have Jungle Boy coming out for commentary for Luchasaurus's match against Anthony Henry. Luchasaurus wins this pretty handedly. After the match, Christian Cage appears on the screen. He kind of gets under Jungle Boy's skin. Jungle Boy rushes to the back, nearly gets his hands on Christian Cage before security stops him. Cage takes off. Luchasaurus comes back there to get the security off him. He chokeslams one of the guards, and then Pat Buck tries to calm him down, and then Pat Buck gets a headbutt. Real nasty. And Jungle Boy's like, hey, bro, no, don't do that. Check on him. And that's how we end that. We then get Powerhouse Hobbs telling QT Marshall to not let the factory's problem with Ricky Starks become Hobbs' problem. Good stuff there. Following this, we have Jay Lethal, Sanam Singh, and Sanjay Dutt hitting the ring. They demand that they get another title shot for the TNT title. Wardlow agrees. He's starting to make his way down the ramp. FTR's music hits. They come down with him. I don't exactly remember why FTR doesn't like Sanam Singh and Jay Lethal, but, you know, I'm sure there's a reason there. And so they get in the ring. The heels are on the outside. Jay Lethal tries to sneak attack. Wardlow gives him a punch that sends Lethal right into a big rig. That was pretty cool stuff. Good stuff. After this, we get Jericho Appreciation Society. They're being interviewed by Tony Schiavone, who proclaims, and they proclaim that Chris Jericho will become the new interim world champion, Le Champion. And then Daniel Garcia's just like talking it up. He's like, I'm the Dragon Slayer now. I beat Daniel Bryan, so I'm the Dragon Slayer now. Anna Jay feels that this woman backstage is not believing that Daniel Garcia is the Dragon Slayer, so she puts that person in a chokehold to end the segment. Daniel Garcia is good in the ring. He's really good in the ring. He has really good natural charisma, and it's in the subtle things that he does. One of my favorite clips of the year so far has been at Blood and Guts. There's a fan footage of when Sammy kisses Ty Conti. Daniel goes in for a kiss on Sammy, and it's so good. It's just so natural, and it's hard. He just needs time, is I guess what I'm saying, is he just needs reps on the mic, because this felt a little forced. But you know, I love his work. I think he's going to get a lot better before he gets worse. So I think it's going to be good. Anyways, though, following this, we had a really quick match between two former tag team partners, Ricky Starks and Aaron Solo. Good finish here, as Aaron tries to hit a Trouble in Paradise on Ricky Starks as Starks is going for a spear. Starks like ducks it, hits the ropes once again, and then hits the spear for the win. Finally, I remember his name. I knew it, wrote it down somewhere. Nick Camarado hits the ring in this stupid looking outfit. I don't understand what's happening with this. He has a lollipop and this like fuzzy tracksuit. Not digging it at all. He runs in the ring. He gets a spine buster. They kind of get the upper hand for a second. They hold Ricky Starks, and then they're going to hit him with a chair. But Starks was able to escape the ring before that can happen. And then he goes up the crowd to escape the factory in total. We cut to backstage, and Powerhouse Hobbs is pissed. He takes a table, or he takes a TV from its stand. Like, off. I hope they gimmick this. We didn't actually get to see him ripping it off the mound. Because you know when you mount your TV, like how it's screwed in there? I would have loved to have seen him just like absolutely rip that whole bit off the wall and then slam it down. But what we got was cool nonetheless. After this, we have a backstage little bit with Billy Gunn scolding his sons for he was like, how dare you lose the only match I made famous? It was good stuff. Stokely Hathaway comes in. He's trying to give his card to the Ass Boys. He insults Billy Gunn pretty hard, saying like, all right, old man, it's past your bedtime. There's some insurance catering. You might want to grab yourself a bottle. Good stuff. And Billy Gunn has a great response. He's just like, you don't want to be around here right now. And so Stokely backs off. And then we get Danhausen coming into frame. Danhausen. He comes in and he touches Colton, or maybe not Colton, the other guy. He touches him and he's like, don't touch me. Because Billy Gunn reveals that they're going to have a match on Rampage against Danhausen and Eric Redbeard. That's a fun team. That's a really fun team. I'm glad to see that. Following this, something I'm not that glad to see, the Trust Busters make their way and approach the Best Friends. Daivari then kind of challenges Cassidy to a match, so we're going to get that on Rampage. Next up, though, we have the TBS Championship match. Jade Cargill taking on Madison Rae. Jade is still needs work in that ring. I've heard great things, though, that she's working behind the scenes as hard as she can, always training, always with Bryan Danielson, picking his brain. So I think 2-3 years from now, we're going to be looking at a totally different Jade Cargill. It's just for right now, her matches still aren't the smoothest. She's still a little clunky. She's working on her timing, though, and I got to give her props for that. And also, she's just a freaking beast. When you look like that, you don't need to worry about technical stuff, you know? She just oozes charisma. Great. But anyways, she gets the win here with Jaded. After the match, Athena attacks her. But yeah, good stuff. Backstage, we have Thunderstorm being interviewed by Tony Schiavone, and Tony informs Thunder Rosa that Tony Storm is officially the number one contender for the AEW Women's Championship. And Rosa's she's a little awkward too. She's someone that the more she does this, she'll get better, but because her facials were a little off during this whole thing, she was kind of like smiling a little too much. But overall though, good stuff. She's like, I understand this stuff happens all the time in sports, you know? And when the time comes, we'll discuss this further and we'll make the decision or whatever. And Tony's like, bro, I'm here to win that title. So, I mean, I like you, but I'm here to win. I like this segment. That was good. Following this, though, we have the AEW World Championship match. Jon Moxley taking on the Lionheart, Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho brought out the old gear, the old vest, brought out 1,000 different submission holds that I love to see. Yeah, this was a really good match. Really good match. Definitely go watch this just to get like a little nostalgic almost. But we get a really rough spot in here where Chris Jericho literally rips the earring out of Jon Moxley and his ear starts to bleed so much. I think he probably didn't do it at the right angle. It looked rough. But eventually, Moxley is able to... he's able to get the win with a rear naked choke after so many submission holds. So many. Really good stuff, though. After this match, there's a full-on brawl that ensues between the Jericho Appreciation Society and the Blackpool Combat Club. We even get to see Eddie Kingston and Ortiz there, so that was cool. Just when Jericho looks to hit Moxley with the world title belt, hear a record scratch, we hear the Cult of Personality. I was almost going to say something else, but the Cult of Personality makes his way down the ring. CM Punk is back. He whoops some ass, clears the ring. He faces off with Moxley. Moxley flips him off and like gives him a shoulder butt on the way out. That's definitely the match for All Out, and I'm glad to see CM Punk back. This was a really strong Dynamite that had some great character segments, but overall, that closing visual of him, of Punk and Moxley staring off is just fantastic. It's really exciting times that we're living in when you can get such good wrestling on TV, man. Good stuff. So yeah, like I mentioned earlier, my match of the week, go check that out. It's Claudio Castagnoli taking on Takeshita at Battle of Belts 3. You can find that on the TNT app. Yeah, as long as you have cable, you can watch that. And then segment of the week is that Young Bucks, Hangman Page, Dark Order backstage bit, man. That was good stuff. That was really good stuff. Also, runner-up for match of the week was that coffin match. But also another runner-up was the Bobby Lashley Ciampa match. That was really good. Really recommend that. Also another segment of the week, that Sami Zayn bit, getting yelled at by Jey Uso. The Dexter Lumis reveal. There's a lot of good stuff on TV, man. There's a lot of good stuff this week. But let's look ahead to next week. I pulled some previews for both SmackDown and Raw next week. Or today, technically, for SmackDown. You can expect Shinsuke Nakamura to take on Walter for the Intercontinental Championship. I think that match is going to be killer, first of all. But I'm also intrigued to see where this leads for Walter, because he has to wrestle at Clash at the Castle. He has to. So we'll see where that leads. For Monday Night Raw, the only thing that's... we got two things announced. Got Bliss and Asuka taking on Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H., which I think will be a really good match and hopefully gets rid of Nikki's gimmick. And then we also have the Riddle interview that's been announced. Could be a character change. Could really see the start of a new Riddle in WWE under this regime. Give him a fresh coat of paint, maybe. I like Riddle enough. I think personally he's probably a scumbag, but I like him on my screen in some roles, so we'll see. Should be interesting. We have a lot more preview for AEW stuff. So Rampage, that's tonight for you guys. I'm sorry, I forget how time works. You can expect Hook to speak. That should be interesting. Talk about maybe Team Taz, where that's going. Swerve and Our Glory are expected to speak, as well as the return of Bryan Danielson. He will be announcing something. We have the AAA World Mixed Tag Championships up for grabs. Sammy Guevara and his newly wife, Ty Conti, taking on Dante Martin and Sky Blue. That should be a really fun match. We have the Gun Club taking on Bearhausen, Danhausen, and Eric Redbeard. Then we have Parker Bougeur taking on Sonny Kiss. Definitely the wrong person will lose here. And we have Orange Cassidy taking on Ari Daivari. Interesting stuff. I wrote down this Dynamite preview, and I'm just now realizing that these are possibly spoilers. So I'm not going to mention that. But this was definitely announced on Dynamite this week, so I think I can mention this. The AEW World Trios tournament continues with its first round. It starts its first round with the Young Bucks and their mystery opponent taking on Andrade, Rush, and Dragon Lee. Whew, that should be good. I think that's probably the most interesting thing that's going to happen on Dynamite, is who's going to be the mystery opponent. But anyways, you guys, hope you guys enjoyed this. This almost a return to a beefier, real recap and review. I had a lot of fun doing this. I hope you guys have a great day. Please remember to rate this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that be on Apple or Spotify or CastBox or somewhere else. Yeah, thank you guys so much. I enjoy doing this all the time for you. I'm kind of just stalling here. I guess I should just leave. You guys have a good day.